This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 236, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, has been published, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle on Amazon. I have a new website, it is simonbowne.com, and you can go there for my books, my podcasts, and past life regression. This week, I'm talking to James Kelly about his book, Awakened by the Stars, You Have Been Chosen. James has had encounters with various extraterrestrial beings throughout his life, including terrifying abductions by the Greys. Hi, James. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on, Simon. I love to be on your podcast.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Awakened by the Stars, You Have Been Chosen, a third installment in the Lone Believer memoirs. So how is the third book different to the first two?
The third book is basically how I've ended up where I am right now. And so the first book was just more of, you know, my abductions, what went on. The second book was how I dealt with it as a child and as an adult. And the third book was how I've come to terms with who I am and how I've come out on the other end to help other people. And so everything has kind of come full circle in these three books. I really wanted to make it into one book, but the publisher's like, no, I'm not printing 1,000-page book. So we kind of had to break it up into them. But out of all the three books, it seems to be like The Awakened by the Stars is the most popular one.
So for the listeners who haven't heard you before, could you just tell us how this all started for you? What was the first experience?
The first experience, if I back up just a while, which talks about in my third book, is I started getting these feelings. I would lay out into the grass like normal kids do, or I'd be playing in the grass, you know, with your toys and stuff. And I'd always get what I call whispers, little feelings of warmth, and something felt like it was talking to me and comforting me all the time, almost like I had a silent friend with me. You know, as a little kid, I didn't think a whole lot about it. I would just say, I'm here, and I could feel the feeling again. And once I got older to, you know, going out from 4 up to 5 to 6, I started having different dreams where I would actually have dreams about the Arcturian visiting me as a child. It was very peaceful and loving, and I developed a little bit of a relationship as a child. But then the nightmare started, and the Greys would start invading my dreams with violent dreams of a little boy being tore open and blood everywhere and laying on a table screaming for their mother. And so really, when I was 6 years old, that's when everything came to a head, where I was taken by an Arcturian lady, who her name is Loran, and she's actually my starseed mother. And from that time, they cut everything out and said, hey, this is who you are, James. Your name is Melio. You're my son. And this is where you belong. And they started teaching me from the age of 6. And that's snowballed to where we are right now, where I'll be 60 on the 20th. And it's been kind of a long path. But that's where everything has kind of moved forward through, from the age I was 6 to right now.
So you were encountering the Arcturians and the Greys, but never at the same time.
No, it was always one or the other.
And so the Arcturians were like, they were good to be with, but the Greys, was it just negative all the time?
It was. I never had a good experience with the Greys at all. It was always experimental, or they were putting really dark dreams in my head, and there was nothing ever positive about it. It just very evil, dark. feelings that I'd always get from them. Even when I wasn't on the ship with them, they would invade my mind with dreams, or I'd get images of them hurting me, you know, things like that. So I was never away from them. But when I was with the Arcturians, everything was so peaceful and calm. The only way I could describe it now is like going into heaven, how everything is supposed to be calm and peaceful. And, you know, there's no death, there's no evil, there's no pain. And I do miss that. They're wonderful people.
Are you able to sense, or were you able to sense when something was going to happen? Was there some kind of intuition or some kind of feeling in the body? And you think, uh-oh, they're coming tonight.
The Greys, yes, I would get an uneasy feeling. I remember as a child sitting on the edge of my bed before they started labeling with, you know, having anxiety. I could feel something like that happening. And I remember as a child just sitting, clenching my fists and rocking. I mean, I would grip my hands. I remember my nails actually leaving crescent circles on my palms because I was that scared. And finally, you know, I'd get into bed and pull the covers over your head with a little air hole, thinking, you know, when I was little, if they couldn't see me, they couldn't take me. But that wasn't at all what happened. So I could feel them. And then with the Arcturians, I'd feel completely the opposite. I would feel peace and love, like a warm blanket would be around me. It was just a completely different thing. And then I could hear them speaking to me, or I'd feel something deep inside of me. So it was two different, you know, different, definitely different races that we're dealing with.
And I suppose being a small child and the age that you are now, that means it was the early 1970s when this was happening, first of all.
Yeah, it was the early 1970s, and I gave a lecture two nights ago about abduction, and I was telling them when I was a child, I really couldn't wrap my head around any of this, because I was given love and support from one being and fear and destruction from another being. And so as a child, I really couldn't figure it out. So all I knew was mostly fear. But now as an adult, I really understand what was going on. And the Greys are afraid of me now. So they don't come for me anymore. So they've kind of disappeared, and I have more direction with the Arcturians now.
And back then, this whole thing of alien abduction wasn't known, was it? There were no books on it. Nobody was talking about this stuff.
No, it wasn't. And my mom was a psychologist, and she was doing the best she could. I mean, she has a child coming to her saying, "Mom, these furnace people or these beings were coming to get me, and they take me to the ship, and they're doing all these experiments with me." And I tried to explain it. And I think in her mind, she really, really wanted to believe me. But if she would have said something to other people or stuff, you know, back then they would have just committed me, thinking I was crazy. So by my mom just not talking about it with others, or saying, she'd always say, "Oh, James, honey, you're just dreaming. It's just a bad dream." And I think that's how she dealt with it, because she didn't know how to deal with it, and she didn't want to think I was crazy or anything. But back in the 70s, yeah, I definitely would have been committed, because there was no groups. We didn't know what we know today. It was just like, "Oh, you're a little child. You're crazy. Let's put you in an institution." And I think that's one thing she didn't want to happen.
So in the early years, how often would you encounter the Greys or the Arcturians? Was it once a week or once a month?
In my mind, they would put visions in my mind, just dreadful visions, sometimes every night, but at least two or three times a week of these visions. And I would be taken by them at least twice, sometimes three times a week. I mean, a month. I didn't know what to do except for just cry. I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. I wish I would have had unlimited access to write my book and make it a 3,000-page book, because there's so much stuff, Simon, that I've left out as a child. Things that I really wanted to put in the book, but I couldn't. And so it's, yeah, it happened quite frequently.
And with these dreadful visions, did you ever work out what was the point of that? Why would they be doing that?
They were, when I started getting older, I talked to the Arcturians. I said, why is this happening? What do they want? And they're trying to figure out how, my brain and how it works. And so they would put these visions and see the responses that I would do or have. And that's why they kept coming into my mind. And because when you dream, your body still reacts to, you know, to energy, just being scared, to being excited, you know, your body reacts to that. You know, your serotonin levels will raise and lower. And I think really that's what they were looking for. And that's what the confirmation of the Arcturians were saying. They were looking for my mind. They were trying to understand what my brain was doing in those dreams.
I see. It did like just experimentation to them.
Yeah, basically. It's like I was a Pavlov dog to them. They would put something in my brain and see how I reacted to it.
How much did you see of the Arcturians before or while the Greys were visiting you?
I had my one visit, first of all, when I was 6 years old. They showed me kind of what was going on, where my home was, and who I was. But then I really didn't have any contact with them. And then I started having more contact when I started being 7, 8 years old. Mostly 8 years old is when I really started having physical contact with the Greys. So until I got much older, I really didn't have a lot of contact with the Arcturians except for telepathy. They would send me feelings. I would have dreams, contacts, that type of thing. But the Greys pretty much ruled what was going on.
And in your book, you say there was a point where the Greys were in your room and one of them said, "The Arcturian child, this is the one we're looking for." How did you feel about that?
I was scared. You just mentioned that and I just had the vision of exactly what you're talking about, because they, as a child, they knew exactly who I was. They knew who I was. And for, you know, think about it, as a little tiny kid, you're who we're looking for. How nightmarish and scared would you be as a child to be able to know that? And, oh man, it just, yeah, ooh, my heart's beating just thinking about it again.
With the Greys, was there a kind of progression in what happened when you were, what happened when you were 8 was different to what happened when you were 11 or 18, or was it pretty much the same thing?
The experimental processes that they did started getting, they started experimenting more. Instead of looking for something or probing me for something, now they, when I got older, now they started cutting me open and looking for things. They started putting stuff inside my body, liquids that, you know, change how I thought and how my body worked. I remember them when I was about 11, they would hook up a machine to me and I could see all of my nerves and I could see my organs like they were glowing. And so the older I got, the more experimentation they got. To one point, they are experimenting with me so much that I almost died. If it wasn't for the Palladians and the Arcturians coming and getting me, I wouldn't be here right now. I was to that point.
I wonder if they were like aware of humans' anatomy and the like very great knowledge of the human body, but because they saw you as part Arcturian, that's what they wanted to examine?
Yeah, they were very aware of, like you said, who I was, and they wanted my DNA. That's what I was told, because my DNA is not a normal DNA. It has parts of the Arcturian and parts of me into it. So I am half human and half Arcturian, and they want the Arcturian part because the Greys can no longer breathe. They can no longer procreate because they have pretty much spent, I guess, what their procreation abilities can be. So they, in order to carry on, they needed fresh DNA. And I was told that a lot of the humans now, their DNA, it can't be used, it's corrupted. So they're looking for what's called a star children, who are half human and half other life. And they're using that pure DNA to create other life. And so, yeah, they're very aware of our DNA. They're very aware of how our bodies work. They use that DNA to create new beings. And yeah, they're just awful people.
So just as an aside, when you were with them, was there a smell?
Not really. I could smell what was going on in the ship, like the smell of the ship. I could smell of different things that they would do, like the chemicals or the different wraps, things that the energy that they would use. I could smell that, but the beings themselves really didn't have a smell that I remember. I know that I can't remember the name of the gentleman. I have to apologize, but he had a sighting where the grays smelled like ammonia, and he actually touched them, and 2 days later he died of a bacterial infection. So the grays that I have experienced, they didn't have a smell at all.
So in the book you say the first time you saw the Arcturians, you didn't feel surprised and you felt home. So was it a feeling of, oh, I know these people, I've known them for years, or something like that?
Yeah, it's just like if you've been out and you're like, a minute, have we met before? And you just get this feeling of familiarity with somebody that you don't even know. And that's how I felt. And I think it was, they were preparing me from when I was very little with these whispers, these feelings. This is who we are. And then, you know, when I was younger, I used to lay in bed and have a blue shimmer above my bed, and I could see, you know, the different worlds there, or I could hear them talking with me. When I was younger, I think I was around 4 years old, I awoke to Lorraine standing by my bed. At that time, I didn't know who she was, but I remember her touching my head and just saying, "We will meet again." And I never saw her again until I was 6 years old.
And did she say she was your mother or something?
She didn't say that at first, not until I was on the ship when I was 6 years old. I was asking a lot of questions, and then she came out and said that she was my star mother.
I guess confusing. So I suppose they took some of her DNA and mixed it with some human DNA.
Yes, because I'm actually, this will kind of bring everything into perspective, because I'm adopted. The parents that I have now that raised me were not my biological parents. I was born to a young lady that was 15 years old who consented to the Arcturians to have this, where they took the egg, they implanted the DNA, they put it back into her, they explained everything about it and who I was going to be, and she agreed to do this. So it was different. And I didn't know about any of this until I was in my 50s. And I kept asking them, you know, why is this happening? Why, who am I? What's this relationship? And finally, Lorraine finally came out and said, okay, this is what it is. And she explained it all to me. But she never would talk about it. I've asked several times about it. You know, who am I? Why am I here? Why am I different? You say I'm a starseed. You say I'm Arcturian. Why am I this? And she wouldn't avoid the subject, but she would definitely change the subject. And until later, like I said, later in my 50s, then she finally told me who I really was.
So you say in the book you were on Arcturia for 3 days. So first of all, I want to ask you, how did you get there?
They usually come in portals. It starts off, if you're older like me, you remember TVs that you'd turn on, you see this little pinprick of light in your screen, and that would slowly get larger as the tube got warmed up. And that's kind of what happened. Is I'd be laying in bed or sitting on the couch, or even outside, and I'd see this little tiny pinprick of light, and it would grow into like this 8-foot blue portal. And they would just step out, say, "Hey, Jay, it's time to come. Or Milo, it's time to come." And they would just take my hand, or we just walk through together, and then I would be on Octoria, or I'd be on a different world. And that's how we would be transported back and forth.
Were you missed while you were there for 3 days?
No, and I asked about that, because if you think about it, and it still kind of makes my head hurt to think about it, I don't know why they do something to the time that surrounds. So even though I'm on Octoria for 3 days, here I come back to the same exact time as when I left. And I really don't know how any of that works. I've tried to understand it and I still can't understand it. But they know what's going on and they understand it. Because when I go with them and I'm on Octoria and I come back, my wife is still lying in the same position as when I left, or the TV's still on in the same channel as when I left. It's different. I'm not quite sure how all that time continuum thing works, but it somehow, they control it.
So what was Octoria like? Did you find the gravity was not too light or not too heavy? Was the air pressure all right?
It was different. I could tell that I was somewhere else. The air was so different. It was like breathing in life. It was just pure. The planet's gravity was just a little bit different, but it wasn't like majorly different. I was telling Holly, my wife, the other day, I'm like, if I could go right now, I would go and not come back. I would stay there. But the flip side is the police would come and want to know where I was. And then the police would think that she murdered me and dug me in the backyard somewhere. And it'd be kind of a bad thing. But the planet itself is so beautiful. Everything you touch is life. You touch a flower, it reacts to you. You touch water, you can feel the life in the water, the trees, the air, everything has life to it. And you can touch like a flower and you can telepathically tell it something and it reacts to you. And it's just an amazing world. Everybody is so calming and peaceful and loving. And it's like being in heaven. If I could describe heaven, it would be Octoria. And yeah. I talk to my kids. I'm like, because I don't hide anything from my children. They know what's going on. And I'm like, would you guys want to go? Whatever, let's just all go right now. I can have us go right now. And they're like, no, Dad, that's your world. We want to stay here. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. But I think if they had a few minutes just to be there, I think they would actually change their mind. But they have that choice. They have their free agency to make that decision. So
why were you there for 3 days? What did they want you there for?
Every time I was there, it was for training. They want me to train, to learn how to deal with my telepathy, how to use my telepathy better, how to be more loving, more kind. So each time I was there, the older I got, the training changed. So when I was younger, it was like, okay, let's teach you how to use telepathy. And let's teach you how to talk to plants. Let's teach you how to ask for things. And that part of it was so simple. But then the older I got, it's like, okay, now we want you to be able to put your hand against a tree or whatever and talk to it and have it react to you. And you need to talk and sit and make things move, or they'd have things move it along the table. And I'd use my mind to move things along the table and lift things up with the table. And then the older I got, I started getting into not combat, but learning how to use what I have learned in a different way, combining peace and, I wouldn't say, martial arts or something, but it was both of them together that I could learn how to deal with the grays. So when they came for me, the person that was trained in me, her name was Orla, and she taught me how to use my telepathy to block the grays' neural blocks. Because when the grays come and get you, they put in a neural block, which allows you to mentally stay awake, but your body doesn't move. And so they can take you without any problems. But when Orla taught me how to do that and the grays came after me, I used it against them and they couldn't take me. And so that started a progression. And then now when I'm even older now, I was actually taken to Octoria and they gave me a student. And that was very hard for me because I saw a little six-year-old boy there. And immediately all the pain and suffering came right back. And I felt so horrible that he had to go through this. But on the good side, I'm here. I have experiences here so I can help him better. Where I was being learned, taught from Octurians, where I'm half human, half Octurian, I can understand him better and train him a little bit better. And that's where I am right now is I've come full circle. Once I was the student and now I've been taught over the years going back and back to Octuria. Now I can teach others on how to do things. I can, like my son, Joseph, he says, "Dad, is it crazy that I talk to plants?" I'm like, "No, it's not crazy that you talk to plants. Why don't you talk to them? Here, let me teach you how to do that." And I teach him how to meditate and put his hand on the plant, and you could feel the energy of the plant. And so I've graduated. Now I'm the college professor and being able to share all these things with other people now.
Did you have downtime on there? Like you'd stop for lunch and then in the evenings you'd have food and a room to sleep?
Oh yeah, I had my own house, which they gave me. They said, "This is yours." And it was a very modest dwelling. It just had, a living room, a kitchen, and it had a seating area where you could sit and meditate in a bedroom and a bath. Well, they didn't call it a bath, but yeah. So I would do that. And on my downtime, I would go there and sit and think about things and eat. And just like a normal person does here on Earth, I would have my friends. I talked to my friends that I basically grew up there as a child with, and we would talk. We'd go sit on the seashore. We would talk about our old, being a child, having fun as a child. Do you remember this? Do you remember that? Oh, you were so crazy. You didn't understand simple things. And they'd kind of jest me and tease me a little bit. But yeah, we did have downtime. I wasn't on Octoria all the time. That it was all learning. It was sometimes really great and to be with my friends. And sometimes I would just sit and talk with my mom and she would explain things to me. So yeah, it's just like here.
And throughout your life, has your family ever seen something like just lights through the window or something in the room?
Yes. My wife and I, we have a fairly large yard and we have a fire pit. We like to do fire pits at night, roast marshmallows, have fun with the kids. And one night we were just outside and I said, "Do you see that?" She goes, "Yeah." And it streaked across the sky and stopped. And then it went straight up, went down on a 45 degree angle, went across to the left on a 45 degree angle, and then jutted across the sky. And this was something that was witnessed. I recorded this on my phone. And my wife witnessed this too. And she looked at me and I'm like, "Welcome to my world, honey." She goes, "Oh." And she goes, "No, I understand." And then we played that video for our friends. They're like, "Oh, this is so cool. This is so cool." And then one day, my phone started glitching. It was going in and out of screen. Stuff was being erased. And that video and a lot of the pictures that I've taken of, different events were gone. So, yeah. But Holly has witnessed things on her own. She's actually witnessed lights. Like, why do you have the light on? She'll wake up. Why do you have the light on in the room? And so she's seen, you know, she has seen different things.
Well, that's handy, I suppose. If she'd never seen anything, when you first talked to her about it, did she doubt you?
Yeah, she told me I was a delusional and schizophrenic. And it was very hard on our marriage at that time because she was trying to process all of this stuff and she couldn't. I mean, how can you? If you look at a normal person outside of this, it's like, oh. But the more experience I started happening and her throughout our marriage, she starts going back and say, oh, I remember this. Oh, yes, I remember this. And she started piecing all of the puzzle together. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry I didn't see this before. I'm like, it's okay. I mean, would I be any different if she was going through it and I was on it in her place?
So can I ask you about the Shakara Greys? How are they different to other Greys?
The Shakara Greys, well the little Greys are just drones, but the Greys that control the little drones are thin and tall, maybe 6 feet. I have never seen them more than 6 feet, and they're thin, spindly, where the Shakara Greys can be 7-8 feet tall. They're very muscular. They still have the almond eyes, the black eyes. Their heads are, you know, in the same proportions as a gray, but their skin is different. It's more like elephant skin. It's all cracked and things, and it's like blacks and purples and different sort of colors onto that. And they are not nice people. The only thing they want from you is to treat you like a lab rat. And if you die during the procedure, they just dump you. They're very vicious people. And they're right now, they have a base on the dark side of the moon. And that's where they are. And they've been there the whole time.
Do you think they're genetically engineered to be that way? It sounds almost like a hybrid with reptilians.
Yeah, when I was talking, last time I was on Octoria and I was talking with Orla, I said, you know, where are these Greys come from? Because they were saying that they're from the dark side of the moon. And she says, no, they're from a star system way out on the edge of the galaxy. So they're not even close to our solar system or anywhere else. But they're here because there's life here. And they're using us as test subjects. And so I don't think they're not genetically manufactured or altered. I think that's who they are. They're just these big grays, and they're strong. Holy cow, they're strong. I did everything I can, and I consider myself a very strong person, being in the martial arts, being in, you know, in the Marines and stuff like that. And I had a heck of a time when we had a physical confrontation of getting him off of me.
So can you tell us what happened? Because I read that in the book, that they came for you and you resisted. What happened there?
There's two different times. The first time they came and I tried to resist using the neural block that I was taught, and it didn't work. They just came and got me. And they put me on their craft, and I was on their craft, and they started opening me up and doing all these experiments to me. And I was feeling all of the pain, just like if it was done here on Earth. But I wasn't to the point of, I wasn't dying, because if you did that here on Earth, you would definitely die in the hands of the pain. But they actually injected me with something, some kind of a yellowish, orangish liquid that made my whole body glow inside. And to the point that I reacted to the liquid as something, I was dying. And if it wasn't for the Arcturians and the Palladians coming to rescue me at that time, that I definitely would have died. And the Arcturians put me in a healing bed and helped me and brought me back. But it was still like 3 weeks after the event that I was still not doing well. In fact, the night that they brought me back, my wife wanted me to go to the emergency room because she thought I was actually going to die. I was so sick. And I got through it. Everything was fine. But then later in my book, they actually came. And this time I was prepared because I've learned so much and I was ready for them. And it turned into a physical altercation. And they tried to take me. I'm like, no, you're not. And they grabbed me. I was picking one up and I threw it across the room. I hit it so hard that it landed on our coffee table in our bedroom and broke the coffee table. And both of them came at me. Both of the Sicaria Greys came at me at once. And I thought, no. And I pushed my hand forward. And it was anger. It was pure anger that I sent to them, and they just vanished. It was almost like a mist, and they were gone. And one of the Sicaria Greys was going to hurt my wife. That they were going to take Holly. And I told them, they're not going to take you, and that's the way it is, and you leave my wife alone. And it just got really ugly to the point that the last gray, we got in a confrontation. It actually threw me so hard against, I have my office area I do podcasts in, and it has kind of a false wall that looks like Area 51. And I landed up against that, knocked it over. I broke my rib and broke my wrist trying to defend myself and defend my wife. And finally, I just stood up and sent energy at him again that I was taught, and they disappeared. And there's a lot more to the story. You could read it in the book. I go into a lot more detail. But that was the last confrontation I had with them. It was to the point that they're turning up the scale now. Now, instead of we're just going to take you. Now it's like, okay, we can't take you. We know who you are. Now it's a physical battle. It's not like all these nice little abductions. It's now become a serious abduction.
Is it the thing where the Arcturians, even though the Sicaria are so big and strong, the Arcturians can just deal with them easily? It's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, because when the Sicarias took me on the ship the first time, I remember just saying, I can't fight this anymore. Okay, I'm ready to die. I remember a portal opening and them coming through, and they had on like almost spacesuits. And I remember them walking over to the Arcturians, not the Arcturians walking over to the Greys, picking them up off the ground with one hand, breaking their neck and letting them fall down. And the Palladians were doing the same thing. And then Orla picked me up and took me out of there. And yeah, so the Arcturians are very peaceful, kind, loving. But on the other side, they are very strong at the same time, and they can defend themselves.
Is the telepathy with the Sicaria Greys different to other telepathy you've experienced?
Yeah, it's I compare it to telepathy with other beings is like clear water. Everything's clear. You can see everything moving in it, and it's very clean and precise. Talking with the Sicaria Greys is like a muddy block stream. It's hard to focus. It's hard to concentrate. It's hard to get their thoughts where you want them to be. So I don't know if they have that ability to be able to do that. So you can't read their thoughts or use the telepathy, but I have learned a different way now of reading them. It's different than just reaching out and being able to invade their mind, where now I actually become part of them and they can't do anything about that. So they've taught me to switch. So hopefully the next time they come, if they come, then I will be more prepared.
Is there a thing with the telepathy, whether it's the Greys or the Arcturians, where you know which individual is communicating with you because there's a certain feeling to it, a certain essence that only they have?
Yeah, like the Arcturians, like I said, when you communicate with them, you can just, it's a love. It's just a feeling of love. With the Greys, smaller Greys,
You just, it's a feeling of darkness and evil, but it's not like an overpowering darkness and evil. It's not like, I consider in the lecture I gave, I go, the, you know, the dark grays or are, if you feel it's more like, they're more like Darth Vader, or they're just obsessed with the darkness. Or the lighter grays, smaller grays, I mean, yeah, you'd still feel the evil and stuff inside of them and what they want, but it's not as bad as the Sakari grays. And so I got a good laugh out of that when I gave the lecture. I compared the Sakari grays to Darth Vader. But it helps everybody to kind of understand, because if you've watched Star Wars, you understand how that would be explained.
So what do you say to people who might suggest, well, this is all science fiction, you're just making it up?
If I had a dollar for every time somebody said that, I would be rich. There's so many people that, when I do podcasts, because they're all live, and they're like, well, you need therapy, James. I'm like, well, I'm getting it. It's not helping. And so I try to use that as a joke to, you know, to lighten the mood, to be able to do that. But I do have some people that actually are very rude, are mean, and said, you know, you're a nutcase. You didn't see this. You're making this whole thing up. And I'm like, well, you know, we all have our free agency to believe what we want to believe. And if that's what you believe, that's fine. But I'm not ever denying that what's happening to me is real. And that's how I kind of deal with it. And people do call you crazy and delusional. And I've had friends call me schizophrenic, and they don't talk to me anymore, which kind of breaks my heart. But they all have their ability to believe what they want to believe. And unfortunately, everything that's going on right now, there is so much stuff that's being released, and there's so many things that are happening that I think you're going to see people stop saying that. They're going to be like, oh, something's going on. I don't know if it's going on with you, but something's going on. So,
and yeah, and I think one of the congressmen, sorry, I'm English, I'm not quite sure about the, how it all works yeah. there, but David Grush was in this news conference the other day, and they asked him about the aliens, and he said something about there's such a wide range of them, from physical to even, it seems, sentient plasma.
Yeah, there's so many beings here that are on the Earth. Our Earth is like a little jewel in this area. And there's so many beings here that are, they're kind, they're loving, and they want us to finally put away our childish things and grow up and do what we're supposed to do. And they're waiting for us with open arms. So when that happens, they'll include us in what's going on. But on the other hand, there's a lot of beings that are lower vibration that exude evil, and they want to use us for experimentation. They want this Earth for themselves. They want to start a war, and that's their whole being, is evil. And so you have those two, and there's no in the middle. There's no like, well, we're kind of this, we're kind of that. No, you're on the side of we're waiting. These guys need to grow up. This is how it is. Or we're going to take over your planet and we're going to enslave you. So that's kind of the two sides that we have. But I'm finding more and more stories are coming forward of Arcturians and Palladians contacting people. So I think it's coming short. I don't know when, but I think it's coming, that there's going to be a full disclosure.
I think one of the things we do is kind of imprint on them, the greys or whoever it is, that they're just like us in the way they think and their motives and their emotions. But I feel that that's wrong. Would you say the Arcturians, they have the same IQ as us, the same kind of likes and dislikes?
The Arcturians are so far beyond us. They live for thousands of years, and they don't die like we die. They decide, hey, I've experienced everything I want to experience, and then they move on to the next dimension. So they're really quite different. They have emotionally matured to the point that there's no evil. And it took me a while because when I'm there, everybody can read what you're thinking. And so one time I was thinking about something and I'm like, I wish people would just believe me. I'm so sick and tired of people not believing me. And I had somebody stop and turn and look at me. And so they know those thoughts and feelings, but they just don't use them anymore. It's beyond them. That's old school. But with all of the other beings, that's what they're thriving on. Because even though the grays are way millions of years ahead of us, they're still holding on to that old school hate, evilness. Oh, we want to take over you. We want to use you. We want to use your planet. They haven't learned how to love, or they just don't have the capacity for love anymore.
So can you tell us about, is it your sister, Sari?
Yeah. My sister, Sari, she is a great person, and I can't even express the love I have for her. We pretty much grew up together. When I was first taking on the ship, she was the one that was helping me and teaching me how to use my telepathy and how to move things and how to use it. And my relationship with her is just like any other sibling. We have never fought. That's above them. But we have talks and we have fun. We eat at dinner and she says, how is your family? How is this? And we have this great relationship because we grew up together. So there is that sibling thing that's going on. She is just, she's very Arcturian. She doesn't think like I do. So sometimes I will say something and she'll go, what does that mean? And I'll kind of chuckle. And then she will look at me with a look like, you're an idiot. Not thinking that way, because they would never think that way, but kind of that way. So just growing up together, it was a lot of fun. And I had other friends too that I grew up with that were there. But I've always stayed really close with my sister, and she speaks to me when I get really down, Simon. And sometimes I just sit and cry, because even though I'm older, I still have those feelings. And sometimes it just becomes very overwhelming for me. Like, why can't I be normal? Why can't you guys? I wish this never would have happened. And when I get at my lowest point, I always get a download. And what downloads are is a telepathic connection between one being and another. And a lot of the time she's like, little brother, it's okay. I know what you're feeling. I can feel your tears. It's okay. And she will just talk to me. And then afterwards, I feel so much better. But I'm always amazed how she always knows the time that I'm the lowest and how she always helps me. And I'll be forever grateful for her, ever. I feel kind of sad because I'm not going to live thousands of years where she will. And I've asked her before, I'm like, are you going to miss me? She goes, well, I will miss your energy and the spirit that you have. I'm like, okay, that's okay. Because they don't talk like we talk. But she's such a great person. And she's very thin and tall. And she works at the what I call the academy now, where they have star children from all over the galaxy that they train there. And the same training I went through, but it's in a more of a bigger classroom setting.
But do they ever talk about life after death or stuff like reincarnation?
They talk about the Arcturians believe in a god, but they call him the creator. They don't call him the god. And so they believe that he was he created everything in the universe in all the dimensions that are out there. And they talk about he'd have love and peace and kindness. And this is what the creator wants. And you need to have this for other beings. And if you can understand and do this, then you can elevate yourself to different levels where one day you can actually be with the creator. Now, when I was talking, you know, I had this conversation with him, with Lauren before, and she's like, there's different levels that we get to. And you guys are like at level 3. They're on level 10. God is at level 12. And so there's a whole bunch of different levels that we're going to have to get to be able to do that. I'm like, I understand that, but why don't you call him your father? Because I, you know, I've been brought up to teach, you know, he's my God and he's my father. And why don't you guys, they're like, well, we were the first created. So we are the first beings that the creator created. And so we don't call him the father. We call him our creator. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Okay. And so, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Now you say in the book, they expanded your connection to the web of light. What does that mean?
The web of light is everywhere in the universe. Every dimension, there is a connection. It's kind of like if you have a giant spider web and you lay it over the universe, and every little connection where it crosses is a point. So I was taught how to use my telepathy and use that web where I can focus on a spot clear across the galaxy or clear across the universe, and I can see in my mind that planet or that being or whatever. Now this web is a connecting. That's why when you see UAPs in the sky and they come and then within a second they disappear. What they're doing is traveling through the web. Like they will come along here, pop out one, go back, and then they might pop out clear by Mars within not even a second. So the web is made for traveling. You can physically travel that way, or you can mentally travel that way. And that's how I was taught over a course of many days. And it was really hard that I could think and concentrate on these beings. And it was so funny that Simon, I could feel them. I could feel their pain. I could feel their joy. I could feel their happiness. I could see their world. I could see them, but I wasn't physically there, but I was there. And so that's how this whole thing is working, that people just don't understand. They're like, oh yeah, they just popped out of a doorway, or they popped out of a portal, or their ship just came actually out of a dimension, which is all true, but they're using this web as spots to be able to, like on the earth right now, there's spots that you can stand on if you understand how to use it, and you can go from here to a different planet. You can go from here to Saturn. You can go from wherever. There's doorways everywhere, and it's always been like that.
It's been great talking to you again. Can you tell us about the first two books and where people can get your books?
Yes, my very first book, all three books are on Amazon, so you can purchase them there. My very first book is You're Not Alone, and it goes actually through and talks about all of my experiences from when I was 6 years old, everything that happened to me, how I tried to get people to listen to me. And it's quite graphic, but it's a very good book to let you know, hey, if you've had these experiences, you're not alone. I had them along with you. And my very next book is called You're Not Alone, Understanding Who I Am as a Starseed. And that goes through how I dealt with it as a child in school, in life, how I went through all of this stuff and how I came out on the other end and not ending up killing myself. And then the third book is Awakened by the Stars, You Have Been Chosen, which takes you through how I dealt with everything on a higher level, more as an adult, and going through and learning higher knowledge and higher things and coming out on the end and like, you know, James, you're okay. This is who you are. This is who you're meant to be. Now go share it with others. And so that's what all three books are about.
You have plans for another book?
I could. I've been thinking about it, but I'm kind of booked out right now with between writing and doing book signings and podcasts and stuff like that. So I think I might just kind of take a sabbatical for a little while.
And could you tell us about your podcast, where people can find it?
Oh, so I don't have my own podcast. I am on other people's podcasts, which I'm trying to set up my own podcast right now to be able to do that on a weekly basis, where I'm going to be on, and it's more like what we're talking about, just answering questions back and forth to each other. And hopefully that'll be coming out soon. I do give lectures around the country. People invite, like MUFON, other organizations invite me to talk and share my experiences. So that's where I kind of am right now.
Great. Well, the book's called Awakened by the Stars, You Have Been Chosen, a third installment in the Lone Believer memoirs. And thanks again for coming back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Invite me back anytime. I love being on your podcast.
Great, thanks. And that was an interview with James Kelly about his book, Awakened by the Stars, You Have Been Chosen. And my book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, is available on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And my website is simonbound.com. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review. And thanks for listening.